the closing ceremonies of the Olympics are happening this evening, and I, for one, will be sad to see the Olympic Games draw to a close. I've had a routine for the past couple of weeks of finding a place downstairs in our basement, turning on the TV to be thrilled, to be entertained, to be awed by the likes of people like Simone Biles, Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, and Katie Ledecky. It's extraordinary to me to watch what these bodies, or at least those bodies, can do when you when you combine natural talent with a deep multi-year commitment to train these bodies. It's extraordinary to watch what the physical body is capable of. And as I watch those games, I do so as a preacher, and so as I watch the games, I'm not just seeing their performances, but there are times when certain verses come to my mind. And so these verses from the Apostle Paul came to me recently. Train yourself in godliness, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. You know, the Olympics are going on back in Paul's day. They thought that the game started about 769 BC. They went for about 1,200 years until an emperor put an end to what he called these pagan practices. So I'm sure Paul was also a person who was able to be entertained by the Simone Biles and Michael Phelps of his day. But as he was watching these games, he thought, you know, the physical body that we've been given is to be cared for, trained, it has value, we want to live healthy lives. But he says, you know, what really is of more importance is how you train the mind and the heart and the spirit. That those trainings of what makes us authentically human, spiritually, emotionally, in a soulful way, that kind of training has value, pulses, not just for this life, but also for our eternal life. You know, at some point in the not too distant future, Simone Biles will no longer be able to defy gravity. Usain Bolt won't be leaving scorch marks on the track. Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky won't be able to move through water as if they have propellers on their feet. These bodies, as we all know, you don't need to be an Olympian athlete, no, these bodies have a way of getting older, of losing their vitality. Our capacity begins to decline. But our spirits, see, they can be trained and developed and grown and matured until our very last breath. So Paul says it's important to really drill down people of faith and what it means to be folks who are training in godliness. And so we are called to do that throughout our lives, no matter what age we are. You never get to a point where you are fully trained as a follower of Christ. There's always some new capacity to grow in love. There's always some way to expand that ability to extend grace. There's always some way to be more committed to live a life as a follower of Jesus Christ. At the end of the day, we won't be standing before Olympic judges who want to know how fast we can run or how high we can jump. We're going to be meeting our Creator who's going to want to know how much of God's character did we allow be formed within us. That's our deep reason. And so this morning we're going to be turning to the greatest spiritual coach, advisor that there ever was, Jesus of Nazareth. In a collection of teachings that we call the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus lays out for us of some very profound principles of what it means to be people who are trained in the ways of God. And he tries to correct some pretty deeply held misconceptions about that. Let's take a listen to what he has to say to us as we turn our attention now to the Gospel of Matthew. Do not judge, or you will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Here, let me take the speck out of your eye," when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. May God bless to our hearing and to our living this reading from God's holy word. Well, one of the stories out of Rio that didn't get a whole lot of attention was the fact that there were several boxing refs and judges who got pulled from judging Olympic competition. Apparently, some controversy was erupted when an Irish boxer named Michael Conlon lost a boxing match to a Russian opponent. A loss that made no sense to virtually everybody else who watched that boxing match. Conlon sent out a tweet, a rambling, angry response, directed even to Vladimir Putin, wondering if Russia paid off these judges to rob him of his victory. Well, the Olympic advisors, officials, reviewed some of the many decisions that took place in boxing and realized there were a few folks who seemed to always come up with judgments that didn't make a whole lot of sense based on what was actually happening in the ring. They didn't accuse the officials of outright corruption, but said maybe they aren't really able to judge effectively. Now, I can recall many, many times in previous Olympics where there was some questionable reffing or judging going on, especially during the height of the Cold War. I remember there being a basketball game where Russia won because of a questionable call by an official. Boxing also seems to be a place where judging seems to be looked at with a suspicious nature. Are folks really seeing what's happening, or are they being pressured by political entities to award their nation better results? It's hard to judge well, apparently, even when you're looking at action in front of you. But the concern about good judging doesn't extend just to the sporting world. Jesus says, you know, I have concerns about folks who judge outside the sporting world. In fact, I'm concerned that people who judge at all tend to make a mess of it. It's not just boxing officials. It's the ordinary Joes and Josephines who walk around not judging sporting events, but judging other people. And Christ says, I don't think anybody does this well, except God. And he tries to zero in on the problem around the issue of judging. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? I know it'd be hard to see clearly with a big 2x4 coming out of your eyes. You're not going to see things very well that way. Christ says, you think you're seeing things clearly and objectively when you judge someone else, but in reality, see, your vision is being radically altered, influenced, distorted, because you are looking out through a prism, a lens, a context that is a compilation of your own mindsets, ideologies, passions and prejudices that makes it impossible for you to judge fairly. He's speaking here of a truth that has its roots in the Jewish Talmud, an exposition of the Jewish law where a rabbi said, we see things not as they are, but as we are. What a profoundly insightful thing. You might think you are seeing the political landscape and election through clear eyes, but maybe part of what you're seeing is something within yourself. What we see is really a projection often of our own inner world, of the lenses that our parents and our culture and perhaps our church have helped to frame for us that makes us see things in a certain way. Ways that define for us what's right and what's wrong, who's good, who's bad, who's this, who's that. We look out through these lenses thinking that somehow we are seeing things clearly and objectively, but Christ says we're not. It's all an illusion. The story is told of two travelers who went to a foreign city. They both went to the exact same place, were there for the exact same amount of time, stayed in the same hotel, even went to the same restaurant. When they came back, the first person was asked, well, how was your trip? Said, oh, it was terrible. The people were rude, mean. The city was dirty. Couldn't wait to get home. They asked the second traveler how her experience was. She said, that was fantastic. People were kind, compassionate. They were so friendly. I'm just sad I had to come home so soon. Two people saw the same thing, experienced the same reality, but somehow saw things very differently. Why? Because maybe we tend to find what we're looking for. We tend to see those things that we are conditioned to pick up. And that shapes our perceptions in our judgments. The Apostle Paul makes that point really in the opening part of his letter to the Romans. Powerful theological treatise, Romans is. In the first chapter, Paul spends a number of verses laying out for us in very graphic detail what ungodly behavior looks like. It's like he's gathering his Jewish Christian leaders and he says, we know what those ungodly people are like, don't we? They're perverts. And they're gossips. They're idolaters. They're greedy. They're coarse. They're vicious. They're unrefined. They're people who have really lost a sense of their human dignity, haven't they? You can almost hear, as Paul is listing out sin after sin after sin, his Jewish Christian leaders saying, that's right. We know that those Gentiles are just like that. We know that those Greeks, those non-Jews, are those dirty, disgusting, ungodly people. You're right, Paul. But Paul is a tricky theologian in this case. He's really laying out a trap for his listeners. Because right at the beginning of chapter 2, he turns the table and says, you have no excuse. You who pass judgment on someone else for whatever point you judge another, you are condemning yourself because you who pass judgment do the same things. It's like he encouraged them to judge these people. He says, now that you've done it, I want to show you something. You who pass judgment, you've condemned yourselves because you do the exact same things. Paul is letting his Jewish brothers and sisters, those that he's known for a long time, they may have thought that they, in some ways they were better, more enlightened, more godly, more pure. But actually, Paul says, everyone is in the same boat. The boat where every single passenger is in need of God's grace. You're all in the same boat, Paul says. Greeks, Jews, rich, poor. You're all on the same boat that needs the profound, unending grace of God. And he's trying to get those who have considered themselves somehow to be godly, who call themselves God's people, to see that they, by judging others, have been engaging in some very ungodly behavior. Says you're comparing yourselves to others as if you are in a spiritual competition and you are awarding yourselves gold medals for your spiritual achievement and decorum. But in truth, you are failing as much as they are. Or perhaps even worse, because you're judging. Judging is perhaps the most common thing we humans do. And it's so profoundly destructive on so many levels. On a communal level, judging others creates animosity, separation, suspicion. And it helps to build the scaffolding or the framework for violence. When we can convince ourselves that those people, and we know who they are, we don't call them Gentiles today, we're more specific, but we know who they are. We carry around in our mind who those people are. From our perspective, it might be those progressives, those illegals, those terrorists, those whatever, or it might be, you know, those conservatives, those this, those that. We have in our mind who those people are who just don't get it, who are a threat, who aren't us. And so judging allows us to create some space, allows us then to objectify them. And once we objectify them, we can diminish the image of God in them, and then we can create for ourselves a blanket permission to treat them in ways that have stripped them of their God-given value and dignity, which allows us then to pursue our own agendas without feeling guilty about it. In fact, we are convinced ourselves that we are doing so in a righteous way. After all, we are doing the work of God. There's something about being around the things of God that make doing the temptation of doing God's work for Him very enticing indeed. As bad as judging does for other people, what it creates in community, it also has a profoundly personal, individual destruction as well. We do great damage to ourselves. Paul and Christ agree when we judge others. Paul says, when you, a mere human being, pass judgment on them, it's always them, not us, and yet do the same thing, do you think you will escape God's judgment? Or do you show contempt for the riches of His kindness, forbearance, and patience? Paul says, when you judge, you act as if you are God. And you show contempt for what God is really like. A God who is actually kind, forbearing, and patient, trying to nudge people to repentance. You show contempt for that God by replacing Him with an attitude of anger, judgment, and condemnation. Christ says, when you judge others, you really are judging yourself. You just put yourself at the defendant's table. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. Again, I think this is a temptation that is rampant right now in our culture. We just feel free to judge other people, lay it out there, use language that slanders, maligns, caricatures people. But I think the temptation is even more compelling for those who are involved in religion. Because when we're about the things of God, again, we somehow get infected with an idea that really we are to do the things of God for God. And maybe God needs our help in judging folks. Maybe God isn't quite up to the task of being the one who looks at us and passes judgment. Maybe God needs us to run around and do that for Him. You do God a favor there. We can become God's policemen, his moral code enforcers. But the gospel says that's not our purpose. In fact, when we do that, we are acting in ways completely contrary to the gospel. I think so often what happens when we judge others, we're like candles. I'm thinking about candles. We had them here for our wedding yesterday. We have candles that give off a certain amount of light. And some candles are taller, some candles are shorter, some are votives, you know, some have or look, you know, like a stick, some are more of a blocky thing. They all give off a certain amount of light. And I think sometimes we human beings are like candles looking around saying, well, I'm so glad that I don't have that shape, or that my wick is taller, or I give off more light than that candle does. I mean, I give off a nice clear light, not like that sort of yellowish hue I see over there. But we're all candles, and we're kind of comparing ourselves to each other, and I thought, what would happen if in the midst of this great candle argument, all of a sudden, the candles look east and they see the sunrise? And they might stop, and they might look, and they might think, holy cow. Look at that. Wow. That is light. I did some research, the sun gives off 1.8 octillion candle lights. Or the right word for that is. That's one with point eight with 18 zeros behind it. Someone says you can stack dimes to the sun and back with how many times more powerful the sun is than one candle. And I think how ridiculous that candles would argue about whose light is greater when we are standing in the midst of something so overwhelmingly powerful. That it makes all those arguments ludicrous, ridiculous, stupid. Might the candles be brought to a place of silence, adoration, humility, reverence? Wow. See, the gospel is meant to turn us towards the sun and to bring us to a place of saying, wow. I thought I was giving off light, but who am I kidding? I'm not the sun. I'm a candle. So are you. And maybe that can replace a judging spirit with something else, a sense of we're all in this together. How great that we are able to give off whatever light we have to. See, a key component of training in godliness is to let God be God. And to let go of our need to act as God. The heart of that is the willingness to stop judging. For when we judge others, we disqualify ourselves from the grace we all so desperately need. That is so important to do and to know. When we judge others, we disqualify ourselves from the grace that we need because we replace God's grace with a measure that we've now imposed by our judging. Perhaps some of you saw the Olympic 4x100 meter relay team got disqualified because they passed the baton too early. We saw other teams get disqualified because they stepped on the line. Those are infractions that disqualify you from winning medals. But the gospel says, you know, what really is the thing you don't want to be disqualified from is grace. Because I can promise you, no matter who you are, no matter who you're going to vote for, no matter what your skin color, your income, you're going to need grace. The last thing you want to do is to disqualify yourself from being grace receivers. So don't judge. That calls for an automatic disqualification, according to the gospel. The measure you give is the measure you receive. That seems to me like a very highly motivating reason to be gracious, to be forgiving, to extend kindness. Why? Because you're going to need all those things in bucketfuls too. The Olympics will draw to a close tonight. Have they made the world a better place? Maybe. They've been entertaining. But what I do know is that the world will be a better place, becomes a better place, when one person stops judging. When that energy no longer gets released into our world, when compassion, kindness is chosen to come from a human heart, the world instantly becomes a better place. And God has unleashed all of us as the church to be those who live in that kind of a way. As we are practicing good soul hygiene, as God's people, our culture. Let's today remember that training in godliness begins with refusing the temptation to judge. And may our God today give us all hope, compassion, mercy, and grace that we might live as his people, not only in word, but also in truth, today, tomorrow, and forevermore.